As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello there, we are on the air. It is basketball day today. This is Jurassic Pod. I'm your host, your co-host, whatever you want to call me. Just call me something nice. I'm Eric Corrine of The Athletic. Joining me, as always, is my pal, my friend, Holly McKenzie. How are you, Holly?
I think I'm doing better than the Raptors this week, but that doesn't really say much.
I would advise you to call a doctor if you're not, or a friend, or a health
aim
professional.
Higher.
If you are not, we are living in a world in which I picked the Raptors to go 1-2 against the two worst teams in the Eastern Conference, and then an admittedly tough game in Cleveland, although they did lose the Cavaliers. They, pronouns pal, lost one of their two All-Stars early on in that game. I picked them to go 1-2, and that was too optimistic. Raptors went 0-3 in the last
week. Don't forget what I predicted.
Yeah, well, I mean, people expect you to be too optimistic.
You say it as though I don't actually believe this, and I really believe they were gonna go 2-1. They were gonna beat Detroit and like snap that little streak, and yeah.
Yeah, well, that was chalk. You picked the chalk prediction. I don't even think it was optimistic. Like, I think that is what, you know, the cynics in Las Vegas would have predicted, did predict, although I told everybody on my Twitter feed to go and take Pistons plus 8.5 on Thursday, and I told them to take Cavs minus 4.5, and I know at least on Sunday, and I know one person listened to me with the Cavs advice, so I will accept, what should I accept, like 10% of his winnings?
But wouldn't the Pistons game have made him lose money? I'm so bad with this.
Yeah, you don't understand gambling. So Pistons plus 8.5 meant if the Raptors won by 8 or fewer and or the Pistons won, he wins. The Raptors had to win by 9 for the person betting on the Raptors to win money in that scenario. If it was an 8-point win for the Raptors or anything worse than an 8-point win for the Raptors, then the person betting on the Pistons wins.
Then the other team wins, even though it's not a certain number of points.
Yeah, so I thought it would have been the Pistons. Yes. Yeah, no, that's minus. So like Cavs minus 4.5, if you bet on the Cavs, they have to win by at least 5 points or more.
If the Raptors win, you win, even if it's by a point?
Well, it depends what you bet. Like, if you bet on the Raptors, this is good for nobody. If you bet on the Raptors and they ended up losing by 4 points, but the spread was Cavaliers by 4.5 points,
okay.
You would win. So all you needed the Raptors to do, if you bet on them, was to lose by 4 points or fewer, or win. Mm-mm.
Okay.
Anyway,
this has been the worst start of a podcast ever in history. I'm sorry. I apologize.
And I thought like I did a very good job of just getting into things, and you ruined it by your total lack of understanding of gambling, which is valid. But then you expressed curiosity about it. So I felt a need to explain it to you. And here we are, 3 minutes.
You know what, Eric? You always are willing to take the time to explain to someone that's curious about something that you know. That is
Said you didn't care, I wouldn't have done that. But here,
No, but that's a very nice trait that you have. I admire that. It's a very good trait to have in a friend.
You gotta walk the line, right, between not over-explaining things and explaining things to the indifferent or explaining them for your own benefit and trying to help a person out when they're legitimately curious. And I like to think I have some keen observational skills that allow me to identify when a person is interested and when a person is not. And if you were not interested in watching the Raptors over the past week, I can't entirely blame you. The Raptors lost 108-106 to Detroit. It was really only a 2-point game. I mean, I trust you. It just, it felt like a, as we were talking about pregame, it felt like a bigger loss than that. But I do remember it did come down to the wire at the end.
108-106.
Yeah. 103-97 loss to Orlando, which was definitely not as close as that score. That score was, as they say, flattering to the Raptors. And Cleveland probably their best overall performance this week, which, you know, damning with faint praise, but they certainly were on the precipice in the third quarter of taking the lead there, thanks to an inspired performance by Scotty Barnes. But they fall 104-96 to the largely Jarrett Allen-less Cleveland Cavaliers. We hope Jarrett Allen gets back to full health soon with his broken finger, which Raptors fans can commiserate with Cavs fans about. And I forget now what the injury he suffered, other injury he suffered, but it seems like the broken finger is going to be the one that keeps him out. Not great, Hall.
Really, really not great. It actually, to me, I said to you just before we started recording that in my brain, even though I watched each of these games and they were not fun to watch, it felt like each game was a 30-point blowout. So looking at the scores, it was like, how did we get here? Yeah, it wasn't a good week. Didn't feel good. Very frustrating. Such a slog offensively. Just not good.
Yeah,
not
if good. If you go back to the win against Brooklyn in Toronto, I believe their true shooting percentage was something like 50.2% or something like that. And what that basically means is they shot as well as Malachi Flynn has shot all season. Now, Malachi Flynn has brought that number up considerably since his start, thanks to some inspired play that was unfortunately followed by his hamstring strain. But if you remember how poorly Malachi Flynn shot at the beginning of the season, that's how bad the Raptors have been over this little stretch of game. It seems like they go 6-for-25 from three every game, and it's hard to win in the NBA in those situations. And we all know the reason, or one of the main reasons, is because they're missing Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby. So I thought we would change up the format this week, Holly, because I don't want to dwell on the negative. Like, people have seen that.
Yeah, you're freaking me out.
Yeah, no, I am, as they say in Hollywood, I am playing against type. It's like when Jim Carrey was worried he was going to be pigeonholed as, like, you know, Ace Ventura or Stanley, what was the guy's name in The Mask? Stanley Ipsum? Stanley's, anyway, I'm not going to remember. Somebody will have it. Did you ever see The Mask?
But I don't.
No, I don't expect you to remember.
I do remember in high school watching The Truman Show. Why they made us watch that in high school? No idea.
I love that movie.
But they pulled out the black stand. You know what I mean, with the TV on top and the VCR.
Yeah.
On the
I don't.
On the wheels. The wheels. Yeah. We watched that in French.
Do they still have those?
I'm assuming not.
Stanley Ipkiss, by the way.
Well, I remember we spent about a week watching The Truman Show in French.
A week? How long? How short were your periods?
I don't know, but it
like,
took
did you
forever.
Stop to have a discussion about them?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell was happening?
But I still don't understand why we watched the, like, what was the meaning of watching The Truman Show in French in my French class? But I think maybe they just wanted us to, like, be immersed in, like, a world of, like, French. But
yeah,
anyway.
That's what they had. I think that movie was ahead of its time, I would say.
Well, I think since then I've been paranoid about...
so you're blaming Nova Scotia education for your... most of us just blame our parents, Holly.
No, my mom's amazing. She doesn't get blamed for anything.
She doesn't deserve this, yes. Okay, no. So after Sunday's game, to try and get this... this rollicky cart that's threatening going off a cliff back on track, I wrote about 10 reasons to feel good about the Raptors in their current state, which is I guess for the record 34-30, currently in seventh, a dwindling possibility of moving up. It has dwindled significantly. And 2.5 games up on Charlotte and Brooklyn as we record this on Tuesday for eighth. And Atlanta proved that the Raptors aren't the only team that can lose to the Pistons, and they lost last night in overtime to the Pistons. Shout out to the Pistons and my pal James Edwards, who wrote last night about the Pistons' first three-game winning streak since 2019, Holly.
Yeah, man, that's a rough.
Dwayne getting it. Happy for
good
him.
For Dwayne.
Anyway, I wrote 10 things to be happy about, and let's just go down the list. And I don't think you've read this piece because you don't support my work.
Yet.
That's fine. but let's see how you react to this.
Yes.
So I'll just read a bit, and we're gonna have you respond. Point number one: the past few games should have been nightmares for Pascal Siakam, Holly. With Gary Trent Jr. struggling, the Raptors have no spacing around him. Siakam's game is about using that space, either as a driver or as a post threat, to dissect a defense. If opponents aren't going to run out to those shooters, there's nothing to dissect. And yet, Siakam has been fighting like hell. I will now stop reading verbatim. 34 points on 20 field goal attempts against the Magic, which is like pretty much the equivalent of 50 points on 20 field goal attempts, given the other ways that the Raptors scored in that game, which is like, they didn't. It was a bit of a rockier performance against the Cavs. He had 24 points on what I believe was 22 field goal attempts, but he did find his way to 13 free throws. He's having trouble on free throws, 7 of 13 that game. He's down to 73.6% for the season, which is 9 percentage points down from last year. But let's keep it on the positive. Like, given the context around him, I thought, and especially when we think about last year, how not only on the court, but like Siakam's general, you know, malaise, his you know, the issues with him and the team, with him and the coaching staff that we've talked about a lot, I thought it was quite nice to see him battle, just like try to find a way in, you know, not good circumstances.
Yeah, I think a couple of the things that stand out to me about Pascal this season, it's funny that you mentioned the issues about him with the team and that kind of stuff that had happened last year, because that was something I was thinking about this weekend, was through all the bad, just watch, especially with Fred sidelined, and OG being sidelined, another starter and kind of core piece. Coming into this season, or maybe it was last season, I can't remember anymore because time. Yeah. he talked about just a bit about the struggle of like not knowing if this whose team it was, or like what kind of leadership role the team wanted from him, you know, that kind of thing. And I feel like we just naturally are noticing now that he doesn't, that's not a concern anymore, you know, like he knows his role and he knows he's a leader on this team. And yeah, like you said, he's just, you know, the 13 free throws speak to it especially, but just he's going out there looking to score without thinking as much. Before we saw him kind of thinking as he was playing, especially during that bubble season. And now he's just playing and you're getting to see the reward of that. But yeah, like Pascal has just become, I mean, obviously I think that, for, you know, Pascal and Fred, interchangeably. It's like they're the kind of leaders of this team.
Yeah.
And especially with Fred out, you really kind of got to see that. Good for him.
Yeah, the on-court results aren't there for the team, but and like as you would expect, there have been some defensive drop-offs for him as he literally tries to carry the offense
to
on
do
his
everything.
Shoulders.
Yeah,
but I thought he's been like it's been a really admirable performance by him, and that's encouraging. Point number two: Scottie Barnes is quite talented.
Oh boy!
Yeah. I don't really have any follow up here, other than it was fun to watch him and Mobley. Like I'm at the point where I mean, I've been here for a while. Like I'd be shocked at this point if Evan Mobley doesn't win the Rookie of the Year. I think it
co Rookie of the Year could it be?
Here's the thing, and I'm not picking on you, but I hate when people suggest this.
I know
because you can't vote co. You can't split your vote. As far as I know, you have. Like, an individual has to vote for one or the other. So if it ends up that they get the same number of votes, great. But, like, that is not an option for, you know, hypothetical voter.
But do you think that's possible?
I think it's very unlikely. I think,
yeah.
I think, it's Mobley has been awesome for a better team. And that's going to get attention. And look, he had 20-17 against the Raptors when Jared Allen went out. The Cavs defense didn't drop off at all. And I think there's a huge credit to him.
It's going to be an even bigger case for him because his role will become even more important for them. So I agree with you.
Yeah, but yeah, 19-12
is freaking awesome, man.
19-12. Sorry, you go.
Sorry. He had 19-12 and 6. He had 3 steals. He didn't have any turnovers. He was 8-14. In the field, like 42 minutes, he was awesome. And this comes off of a performance, I think we talked about it in the last pod, where he had put up a line that hadn't been done since Shaq. Like, it's crazy his ability to kind of shapeshift into what the team needs on any given night, you know? Like, you're really, I mean, I know we can see his passing and his scoring, but I just feel like as he gets more comfortable, and as he, you know, develops and grows and takes on more ownership and, you know, can kind of not worry about the other players on the team getting their touches or whatever, you really are starting to see just the many ways in which he can give you what a team needs on any given night, depending on what that is. And that's really exciting to me.
For sure. So that game against Cleveland, as mentioned, played without Fred VanVleet and Malachi Flynn, the two natural, traditional, or I mean, there's enough people on online who argue whether Fred VanVleet is a point guard, but like he certainly has those organizational skills. So those two point guard like organizers, the only two on the Raptors roster, were not, unless you want to count Armoni Brooks, who I think is a bit more of a combo guard, but. Maybe we'll get to him. He replaces DJ Wilson on the roster to give the Raptors some depth at the guard spot. But the Raptors essentially played that game without a true point guard. And Nick Nurse took pains to call Scottie Barnes the point guard. Now, I'm not sure he was, you know, running complicated sets or anything like that. And the Raptors' half-court offense was not good. So you can't say, wow, Barnes really made it all work and it all come together. And I think we know the reason for that. Like he needs more time. He needs more reps in that. And he also needs to develop his handling in order to take full advantage of that, or his shot to take full advantage of that. But what do you think of Barnes in, you know, sort of the primary ball handling role that we wondered, like, this is the reason we wondered if it might make sense for him to come off the bench so he can get more reps as part of the primary action as opposed to off the primary action.
Yeah, I think it's impressive and it's good. I mean, right now you couldn't put him off the bench. Couldn't bring him off the bench if you wanted to.
And I think, like, we've gone, like, when the Raptors have their best five healthy, I think, barring an awful matchup, I think you want to go with those guys, but you continue.
Yeah, no, I think it's he's continues to just be impressive. And when you put him in a position where he feels like he should be that guy and he's not like looking at the people around him, wanting them to do more or initiate more, or kind of like standing in the background, watching those players do what they do, you see why the team loved him so much and why they're so high on him. So, yeah. He's good. I know that sounds simplistic.
No, but like, I literally started the sentence with Scotty Barnes is quite talented. So I don't think it's a complex conversation. Number three, we don't have to go over this too much, but the Raptors created only 17 turnovers combined against Detroit and Orlando. I thought their defense was, their defense overall was really good against Orlando, less so against Detroit, I would say. But this team is trying to create turnovers. And when they don't do that, it's going to make things very difficult on the offense at the best of times, let alone whatever these times are. They created 17 against Cleveland. And they turned that into a 26 advantage in points off turnovers. And I don't know much how much there is to say other than like that's the blueprint of many Raptors wins is them just causing chaos on that end. And that was, I think, more than the offense. That's what was disturbing to me in this week is they weren't turning to pretty not great offensive teams. They weren't turning them over and they have to do that, right?
Yeah, well, that's why it's concerning, because it's like, who is this team? The entire blueprint of this team and them succeeding kind of depends on that. So you take that away, particularly when you take away, their best scorer and then OG as well. OG also one of the best defenders along with Fred. You kind of see why there was that letdown, but you look at the team, the way this team is constructed, and I know this isn't like a final construction of a roster and this isn't a team that they thought was going to be a championship contender or anything like that, so of course that caveat in there, the way this team is built, there's not a lot of shooting, I think we really were reminded of that this week, but even when you do have Fred VanVleet and OG and Anobi, it's not like there's a ton of shooters on this team, particularly if Gary Trent is kind of, in a moment where he's not hitting everything as he had been for quite some time.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of shooting, not a ton of scoring. So if you're not turning people over and if your defense isn't fueling that, you're going to be in trouble and it's going to make some ugly basketball to watch. And that's what it was a slog.
Credit to Orlando and Detroit for knowing the scouting report and being solid on the ball, like you can't just necessarily.
Oh man, Detroit knows the scouting report. They know it in and out and upside down.
I love Dwayne Casey before that game. He was like, people think I get hyped up for, a win against the Raptors. I get hyped up for a win.
I love Dwayne. Dwayne is the best. Also, I know you mentioned it, but we didn't really go into it. God damn, it sucks about Malachi. I feel so badly for him.
Don't worry, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
If you had read my piece like a good friend, you would know we were going to get there.
Yes, I do read. I'm always just like 3 days behind.
Yeah. Well, that's fine.
Which I know everyone's like, oh, but then everything passes you by, but that's fine. I just like reading it on my face.
Okay, yeah. Continue. I mean, there's not enough hours in the day when you're glued to the TV seeing the horrible things going on in the world. I understand. Number four. To end the third quarter, Nick Nurse used a lineup of Chris Boucher, Delano Banton, Thaddeus Young, Steve Mikhailuk, and Precious Achiuwa. Now, I should mention that I think Gary Trent came in for the last possession of this stretch. And so when they checked in, the Cavs were shooting 2 free throws. So I'm not counting those points. After those free throws were made in the final 2 minutes and 54 seconds of the third quarter, do you want to guess what the score of the remainder of the quarter was?
No, I just want you to tell me.
It was 1-0 Cavaliers.
Wow.
Ed Davis split a pair. why is this a positive?
Ed Davis, Boss Davis.
Yeah, Boss. Good to see Boss. I didn't even use that as a positive, but I mean, that was fun. Why is this a positive? Because it's nice to laugh and it's reassuring when things play out exactly as you expect, Holly. Mm-hmm. Number five. I think
at that point you had tweeted, well, this is a lineup. Yeah. Or like, this lineup's a choice. Yeah,
to be continue. Sure, to be fair, I think I've done that a few times. And like, I mean, I do think there's a way to stagger your best offensive mm-hmm. options at almost all times. But also, like, I don't completely blame Nick Nurse for getting a bit lost in the weeds when this is going on. Like, yeah. it's a slog, man. As you know, let's see how many times we could say slog in this podcast, but it's not simple to run a rotation when you trust 2 to 3 people at any given time.
Trust no one.
Oh, wow. five, Delano Banton, I think we've seen his weaknesses in the last few games, but we've also seen, and like, to be sure, he's part of the problem on offense because like he just, you can't put him off the ball. He needs the ball to do his things, to produce in the way he produces, unless he's going to cut. I don't think there's been enough cutting in general over these games, but when you cut, there's a risk of further clogging the paint. So it's, you know, double-edged sword there. Anyway, some really nice feeds. He had a great alley-oop feed to Precious Achiuwa, like a really complex one in which I think Dean Wade,
not
D Wade, looked like he was right there to bat it out of the way, and Achiuwa came in and took it and got the alley-oop. And he had another great drop-off pass to Thad Young, who airballed a 2-foot hook, and it looked like he thought he was fouled.
That was so weird. It was like,
yeah, like on the replay I didn't see anything, but like his reaction was weird enough that, you know, I don't know,
it was like, very strange, because the replay I didn't see any type of contact, but the way the shot, like, yeah, it was very strange. One of those plays where you kind of think something must have happened.
So let me pose this positive in a question. Is there a clarity of a developmental path for Banton going into the offseason? And if so, what is it?
I don't know. I don't think there is a clarity. I know that we've talked a lot about whether it would make more sense for him to be with this team or to be with 905. And if he's not getting time with the Raptors, then getting reps is the most important thing. But with the way that things are shaking out right now with injuries and stuff like that, I don't really know what... I don't know what that path is going to be. Do you think there's a path?
I mean, I've been on team give him as many looks with the 905 as possible, just to, it's the same conversation we're having with to like an even more extreme degree, because Banton is less important to the Raptors' current welfare than Scotty Barnes, but it's the same conversation as with Scotty. It's like, I want to see him in those situations which help him as a ball handler as much as possible, and if that's down at the 905, then it is. But I you know, obviously all these guys got to go to shooting school, you know, shooting summer school. But
I still feel really great about Delano.
Yeah, it's like, a good pick. Look, you get any sort of contribution from a second round pick, it's good. But like, I you know, just to finish my thought, I think he clearly needs to, you know, just learn some more ins and outs about running a half court offense. And that comes with like developing your handle a bit, you know, and being a more confident ball handler and not just in transition. A lot of the things we're talking about with Scotty Barnes.
Also, you mentioned Dean Wade, not to pain Raptors fans here, but the play where he dunked emphatically and then galloped up the court just with a huge grin on his face made me think about the most painful moments the Raptors have experienced in Cleveland over the years, of which there have been many. And outside of LeBron James moments, whether it's like, you know, drinking beer during a game on the sideline, all of those kind of things. The shot over OG that, like, ugh. The game won in the playoffs where the Raptors missed 46 shots in the final 20 seconds.
Wasn't in Cleveland, but I take your point.
That was, yes, in Toronto,
yeah,
against the Cavs. But taking LeBron out of the equation, which is kind of a big omission when you're talking about the, yeah, Cavs and the Raptors, was that the most painful highlight that you remember?
The only one that comes close is Kyrie hitting a three, I believe, either in his rookie or his second year
in Toronto,
to win it,
yeah,
at the buzzer. Obviously, yeah, less on the line because that Raptors team was not good. But that was a deflating moment too.
Just the reaction after as he came up the court, just, oh man, I thought, wow, this one stings a little bit. Good for him though, man.
D-Wade is an all-timer. I mean, there's a reason, you know, there's the Hall of Fame conversation with D-Wade. It was not great, but, look, we're a fan of role players getting their moments.
Yes, we are.
Here. Like, I tweeted half jokingly, I'm loving the Dean Wade Yuta Watanabe matchup. But like, there's a lot of similarities there. And like, just, you know, very low usage glue guys holding that, mm-hmm, at their best, like, are sort of connective tissue pieces. And Yuta got his dunk in Brooklyn. And Dean Wade gets his dunk, not a loss, against the Raptors. You mentioned Precious Achiuwa on the, mm-hmm, your rundown. Precious Achiuwa was a minus 28 in that game against Cleveland.
One of those occasions, though, where I feel like...
I don't think he was good, but he definitely, like, what I will say, and I also
he was
think,
the only reserve to score a point, and the bench had 8 points. Started. They were all from Precious, and I think they all came in the first quarter.
Yeah, and in that first quarter, he had a few legitimately, like, really strong moves. He pump faked, I don't want to say pump faked, but he pumped. Jared Allen didn't necessarily fall for it. So I guess it was a pump fake, an unsuccessful pump fake that he was still able to use to get by Jared Allen and hit a little floater on the baseline, which is a really hard shot. And then he turned a little driving opportunity into a little spinorama to beat Lauri Markkanen. So, I mean, this is a hot topic in my Thornhill chat group. How much is too much Precious? I mean, I think we can agree that the positive signs are, mm-hmm, you know, you usually see more per game now than you did in December, let's say. Mm-hmm. Where are you with him, and how much rope is too much rope for him in terms of the coaching staff's trust?
The thing about Precious is that he's going to take every inch of, yeah, the rope that you're going to give him. You,
exactly,
know, like,
that's why this question is relevant.
Yeah, no, for sure. I feel like he's, I know there's a lot of talk on the broadcast about how, like, being around the greats of the All-Star game inspired him. And I'm not so big on, like, the inspiration kind of, I know, shocker, I'm not big on inspiration. But, like, to me, I do think that going to All-Star Weekend was good for him. And I think we've kind of been seeing him progress as each month has gone on with the Raptors, like, as he's kind of learned his teammates more and, like, learned the offense more and gotten more comfortable. But yeah, I think the progression has been happening since the beginning of the season. Not a linear straight, like, you know, it's been bumpy and there've been detours. But yeah, I feel like he has shown a lot over the past few weeks, and I think that that's an important thing, especially when the team is without starters, as it is right now, and without scorers, as they are right now. And I would continue to give him opportunity and see how it's going to go. And if it's not his night, okay, then, you know, maybe you don't play him as much as you thought you were going to coming into the night, into the game. But he really intrigues me.
I saw our pal Mark Juliar the other day. It was before the Cavs game, and so it was like the only nice day we've had here, mm-hmm, in a long time. And We went for a long walk and saw him. And Mark says he is the president of the Precious Achiuwa fan club. So that fan club is out there.
I enjoy that. I would join that fan club. I just like him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I get why it's frustrating, because there are moments where it seems like his vision has developed, he knows when to attack and when not to, and then there are moments when he just has wild, out of balance attempts. I forget if it was the Detroit game or the Orlando game. It was the Orlando game, and he like missed a wild drive and then, you know, complained on the baseline for 2 or 3 seconds, and it was able to, you know, he eventually got back, but the Raptors weren't set up in transition, and that led to an Orlando alley-oop, and that's the thing, you can't have that. Like if you're giving this guy rope to show what he can do offensively, it has to be contingent on doing the non-negotiables. So I think we know why he's playing. The Raptors, you know, and somebody like Malachi Flynn didn't get the same chance. Like, the Raptors just need more size or you know, guys who are able to guard centers semi-passively. That's why he gets those opportunities.
He needs the opportunity to, so the team can see what he potentially could develop into. And I think that he deserves them. I still really like Precious.
Yeah. And over the last few games, I will say, I'm not going to kill. And like Nick Nurse said, like, there were a few too many examples of guys like driving into too many help defenders after the Cleveland game. And Cleveland's one of the best interior defenses in the league. At the same time, you know, when you've gone through a bunch of games where you can't hit a three-pointer, like, I get why that's the mistake you're making, you know?
The thing about Precious that I really do like is that I know sometimes we kind of, like, poke fun at the fact that if there's a shot, he's going to take it. And, you know, like, you never have to worry about him being passive or not being aggressive. But I think that's really important with his game and where it is right now. You're never going to worry that when you put Precious into the game that he's not going to try in every way possible to give you something. You know, he's never going to be passive out there. And I really like that and appreciate that.
Yeah, I think that this is where I would nitpick, and it goes back to my last point. Okay, you are putting out effort, but it has to be a full effort in all areas. Like there can't be those moments. You're not Fred VanVleet. You don't get to question a referee after you drive and don't get a call. Like, I
hear you.
And I'm sure it's stuff they're talking to him about. But, you know, so I'm for him getting continued looks and some continued freedom in that role. But if he's good, like, there has to be some accountability on that other stuff, on the getting back in transition, on the, you know, making the correct defensive reads. And I think, like, there aren't many problems with him defensively, frankly. Like, that's part of why he's so intriguing, is because he is really able to step out on the perimeter and guard somebody while also providing, you know, he's not the best shot blocker in the world, but he provides some of that, like, athleticism at the rim that at least makes teams think twice about attacking the rim, which is obviously very important for the Raptors.
I think I'm going to send Mark my official membership request to join the fan club. Yeah. Also, can we just take a moment and think about the fact that, I know we just mentioned this, but Precious had 8 points in the Cleveland game. He was the only reserve to score. I think, and you seem to back me up, that all of those points came in the first quarter.
I'm not positive if they did, but, you know,
okay, let's you're roll. Not. So maybe I am wrong on that. But can we just imagine for a minute that an NBA team went 3 quarters without a single point coming from the bench? That's a thing that may have happened in this game.
a thing that may have happened. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just having a moment. Like, wow.
Yeah. No, you have to bring the negative. I know. We're doing happy hour here. The non-alcoholic.
I know, and I know.
Version.
We talked about Malachi. We're going to talk about him later.
Well, this is.
I'm assuming this isn't in your list because this isn't happy. But, and I know we're supposed to be happy. We're really switching roles here. I just have to mention, DJ Wilson, man.
Ugh, can't catch a break. He.
I feel so bad for him. Like, you pick up your 10-day with the Raptors. He had previously been with the team on one of the 10-day. What was it called?
Let's not even remember it. It was during the spike in Omicron cases.
Yes.
Cases.
Hardship?
Sure. Hardship exemption. But I think they even gave it a special name beyond hardship exemption.
It was another 10. It was basically a 10-day contract. So when he had signed that original one, he then was in health and safety. And, you know, the guy who came to, like, relieve the health and safety issues ended up in health and safety himself. And the team brought him back. And I think everyone from the team to the fans to us, we were also really happy to see him because I really like him and I would love him to be on this team. And it kind of seems like he fits exactly the prototype of, like, the players that are making up this roster. And it was like, I don't even know if it was 2 minutes into his first stint on the court in Brooklyn. He got injured and he remained injured and he remained on the bench for the rest of his 10 days. And the team now released him because they signed Armoni Brooks, which is great. It makes sense. They needed a guard. Totally get it. But man, that sucks. I really like him. And I just would like him to be a Raptor. We've talked about this before. I just can't believe that happened to him again. And I feel really bummed about it.
This isn't like, I don't want anybody to construe this as, like, an anti-DJ Wilson comment, because, like, that would be silly. Imagine devoting your life to have, like, a strong opinion against DJ Wilson. But I do find it funny that, a lot of my mentions, especially, like, after the Thad Young trade, but in general, it's like, oh, the Raptors got another 6'8 long guy who can defend and can't really shoot that well. But at the same time, I'm getting questions before the DJ Wilson signing. Are there any chance that the Raptors can sign DJ Wilson? It's like
he's really likable, and
I understand it.
He's a player.
I just find the dichotomy there funny.
Well, count me in. I'm gonna start the DJ Wilson fan club. So
okay,
yeah, I'm sure there already is one. I'm sure there's many, actually, just amongst Raptors fans. I'm gonna pick one and I'm gonna join it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm going to skip my seventh point, which was that basically the Raptors continue to have the inside track to host one or two games in the play-in tournament if it should require. Mm-hmm. We went over the standings earlier. Obviously the Raptors have not taken advantage of the softer part of their schedule. They have one of the more difficult schedules in terms of opponents remaining in the Eastern Conference. I think it's being, not that the Raptors aren't capable of losing to anybody, as we've seen, but I think the difficulty of the schedule is maybe being hyped up a little too high. Phoenix mm-hmm. is an awesome team. They won't have Chris Paul. The Lakers are dangerous and can beat anybody, as we saw. I mean, the Warriors are in their own way, but like, there's always a risk of LeBron going into LeBron mode, but they also lost in San Antonio.
The Lakers are a mess, but you have LeBron, so.
The Clippers are whatever. Like, they're feisty and without stars right now, although I think Paul George is close to maybe returning. I don't know. So I think like the difficulty of this road trip is maybe overstated a tad. But anyway, I don't want to talk about that further other than the Raptors are still more than likely to be the seventh seed. But yeah, less likely than they were a few days ago, unfortunately. All right, Malachi Flynn time. Bad news, he has a hamstring strain. Good news, he...
out indefinitely.
Yes, hamstring strains, like... It's funny, I used to like hear in my early days, like calf strain or hamstring strain, and assume like, oh, he'll probably be back in a week. Soft tissue strains, like, they can...
And then you got old.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I had a calf strain. It lingered for, like, 2 years. No, I'm not a professional athlete, but these, like, a cursory search was, like, grade one or two hamstring strains, which are not the worst hamstring strains. That's, like, not a full tear. And a reminder, all strains are partial tears. That's what a strain is.
I know, it sounds so much less intense when
Yeah, I think that's the whole reason.
I know, but it always rattles me when I think, oh, that's partially torn.
Anyway, I Googled it quickly. It's like recovery time can vary from 3 to 8 weeks. And I'm like, whoa, that's a wild, time. So, you know, Nick Nurse seemed optimistic about his return being quicker rather than longer. Nick Nurse, let's just say, has not always been, I'm not saying he's not telling the truth. I'm saying like, maybe he errs on the side of optimism when he's speaking to us. So we'll see. But before he played, he started 4 games, three of those games, I'd say he was very, very good. The Detroit game being the exception, but he averaged 16 points per game in those starts, had a 22-1 assist to turnover ratio.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So here's how I framed it. Flynn was playing well before this past stretch, deciding whether to pick up Flynn's $3.87 million fourth year team option, which the Raptors have to make a decision on before next season, would have been difficult. Like, I think they still would have erred on the side of picking that option up because it's not a lot of money and they're not, you know, they believe in their developmental system, but it's still almost $4 million and that money matters at the end of the day. And maybe they would decide he's not a project worth continuing. I think at the very least, this stretch, I don't think it does much to change his trade value or anything like that, but just as a thought of, you know, maybe if he gets back this season, he'll be part of the rotation. Although, you know, if they're in the playoffs, I find it hard to believe that he'll be getting meaningful minutes. But as you look forward to next year, it's a lot easier to go into it saying, here's a guy who has a very good shot of not only being the backup point guard, but making sure that those minutes, those bench minutes and those depth minutes aren't what they have been this season.
Eric, I have a question for you. I'm going to flip this on to you.
Yeah, sure.
How would you grade Malachi's four-game stretch?
B+.
Yeah. Thought so. I fought for Malachi very hard earlier this year, and I'm very happy to see that, to see him play so well when he had that opportunity with Fred out. Also, side note, Fred posting highlights of Malachi to his Instagram stories warmed my heart. Fred remains the best in every way. I expect to see Malachi back. I want to see Malachi back, and I want to see what he can continue to do with a little bit more confidence. Because I think we talked about this last week, but you really saw that. He stopped looking toward the bench as he was playing, or like, you know, if something didn't go his way, he was just playing and attacking, and you really saw him come into his own and just play without thinking. And it's such a bummer that he got injured, and I didn't even like notice that it happened.
Yeah, I mean, he talked to us after the Orlando game.
And yeah,
he finished the Orlando game, so maybe it was wasn't mentioning, you know, like maybe it's just something.
Yeah, because like, he probably was like, I'm going to be fine. I'm not injured. I'm not saying anything. Finally get my opportunity. That sucks. I wish him well to return and just be healthy. And I'm super happy for him. And yeah, I think he was a solid B+ too.
I will say in that Detroit game, they probably needed him to be more aggressive with his shot. And I think he made that corrective in the Orlando corrective. What, like, what type of speaking is this? It's like I'm speaking jargon for no reason. I think he made that correction pretty well in Orlando, in the Orlando game, which is promising to me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think we can feel a lot good, I think we can feel a lot better about Malachi Flynn's progress, keeping in mind who the opposition was in those four games. We just had none of that, basically, for the this season before then.
Well, and he didn't play, so...
I understand that, but that doesn't change the fact that we had none of it. And now we have some of it, and when a thing is good, some is better than none. That's my positive. Some is better than none, Holly.
I really like Malachi, and I wish him well, and I can't wait to see him play for the Raptors again soon.
Point number nine. Well, at least Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby are getting some rest.
Sure are.
Before the break, we saw how Anunoby looked while his finger was bothering him. He missed a lot of shots. After the break, we saw how the Raptors were when Fred VanVleet was playing hurt. In the three games... so I'm including the New Orleans game in which he suffered this particular knee injury. So the New Orleans game before the break, and then the Charlotte and Atlanta games to start the break before he left the lineup. The Raptors were a minus 92 in VanVleet's 95 minutes, which explains why they got blown out in those three games. So we've seen what the Raptors look like with a Fred VanVleet, who is trying to play through something which he should not be trying to play through. So it is good that he's no longer trying to play through it. furthermore, if the Raptors make the playoffs, which is still more likely than not, I'm talking about the playoffs proper, not the play-in game, they will be a significant underdog in that series. And not having your guys as healthy as possible makes that experience a lot less meaningful. Never mind the chances of winning that series. Like, the reps are just less true to this team's overall talent because we know how thin the depth is. And we know that, like, a Fred VanVleet who isn't closer to 85 or 90% rather than, you know, 55 or 60%, you know, the Raptors might as well, like, I don't mean this literally, but they would have no shot in that series. You know, I don't think
they would have no shots. Yeah. You're right. We saw that the past three games. Also, the way that you delivered this line, I have to say, it made me laugh. You probably heard me laughing a couple minutes ago, interrupting you. I apologize. The way you were reading it, and I'm trying to think of the word. Explaining it made me sound like someone who was like trying to like bulk up words on their like book report, like stretch out the amount of words as you tried to like explain this to me. It's kind of funny. Continue.
So yeah, Anunoby seems like he will be out until at least the end of this six game road trip. Probably my guess again, they said, or Nick Nurse made mention that it would probably be 2 weeks until the injury had fully healed. At this point, there's no reason not to let it fully heal. I don't
think. Well, there's no point.
Yeah. So, like, he is on the trip, so maybe he plays in one of the games in Los Angeles at the end of the trip. More likely, I think he's back at the, you know, when they play the Lakers at home two Fridays from now. But
VanVleet, you say this and he's going to be in the lineup next game. But anyway, continue.
Well, sure, whatever. VanVleet might be in the lineup next game. Fred or Nick Nurse sounded pretty optimistic about the two proper off days. Not that, you know, off days mean anything to a player who's not playing. Like, he's just not playing, so the schedule doesn't impact him. But it made it sound like he's maybe a bit closer to a return than not, and they'll need him to pull off some wins on this trip. So good. Hopefully he's that injury has either mostly dissipated or completely healed. Yeah, it's good.
And also just getting the rest probably helps all of the other nagging injuries that don't get reported, but definitely are there at this point of the season. So
yeah.
They're getting rest, not the way we wanted them to, but they're getting rest. So get healthy, because like you said, there's no point in making it to any play-in or playoff if you don't have the players that make up who your team is.
And my final reason for optimism, Holly, is that if the Raptors don't make the playoffs, they keep their first round draft pick.
Yeah, okay. I don't like that one. I mean, sure. Yay. But no.
I like ending on a bummer.
Raptors are going to make the playoffs.
Okay. I tend to agree with you. But, you know, it might mean beating Brooklyn with Kevin Durant.
I know.
If they lose that game, it might mean beating Atlanta or Charlotte,
Will Kyrie still not be allowed to play games here?
As of now, he wouldn't be able to. As of now, he still can't play games there.
I know that, but I was just wondering if, like, restrictions... I guess we would just have to see what restrictions... As of now, he's not able to.
I don't think there's much reason to think he will be able to at that point. Like, there hasn't been any talk about changing the rules regarding vaccinated people or unvaccinated people coming into the country. But who knows?
So that would be an insane series. If things changed in New York and he was able to play there and not able to play here, that would... Wow.
Well, there's not going to be a playoff series between those two teams.
I know.
Unless the Raptors make a very surprising playoff run. And at this
It sucks that a week ago we were like, man, like riding so high, like they're going to move up. They're going to finish fifth. That's what I thought.
Well, that's the reason we're doing this exercise. We got to try to stay even keeled. And when we're down, let's look for the positives. Holly, any other positives you want to hit on before we wrap this thing up?
I don't know. Are there?
I don't know.
I have them in the rundown? I'm not sure. I feel like we wrung out all of the positivity from this past week.
Yeah, it was a great effort by me. I've got to say. the one thing I will say that we didn't mention is Kem Birch looked a lot better in the Cleveland game. Now, Jared Allen went out. That helps a guy look a lot better. But that's cool. I need to see more from him to believe that that's a thing that's going to happen consistently. In your rundown, you wrote start Boucher. I would probably stick with Kem.
Yeah.
For at least one or two more. I mean, you're getting Pirtle. You're getting DeAndre Ayton. You're getting Nikola Jokic. So I think Kem Birch is starting for at least three more games is my way of saying this. I should add, this is not, we're done the optimistic portion of things. Last night, Monday night, Greg Popovich tied Don Nelson for all-time wins by a coach, which means if the Spurs beat the Raptors on Wednesday, he will break the record against the Raptors. You know what's significant about that? Other than, like, it's significant on its own?
That the record was previously set against the Raptors?
Indeed! Do you remember that game? The Warriors?
I do. It was New Year's Eve.
No, it wasn't. I think you're confusing that with George Karl getting his, like, 900th win or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And he was, like, sipping... I don't remember if it was a Diet Coke or like a beer after. It might have been a Diet Coke.
There was one on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, was definitely George Karl getting a
George
landmark
Karl
win.
Yep.
No, it was when Chris Bosh missed a short putback or a layup or something to either win or tie the game, and he ended the game as the Warriors celebrated. He ended up prone on the floor, just like in misery from missing. And he broke his face in Cleveland. There's another terrible moment in Cleveland history.
That was a terrible moment.
He broke his face in Cleveland and never played another minute for the Raptors. So,
and I remember when that happened, everyone saying, imagine if this is the last moment in his Raptors career. Spoiler alert, it was.
Yeah. Hall of Famer Chris Bosh. So that would be a nice, I guess that happened in 2010, near the end of the season. This would potentially happen in 2022, near the end of the season. There are parallels.
I'm blanking on the Spurs player that said this because I read it on Twitter, but whatever player it was like, Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about that in the locker room. Like, Pop doesn't, we're not allowed to talk about the record. And it just seemed like the most Pop thing ever. Do not dare mention this accomplishment that I'm on the verge of reaching. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your prediction for the road trip?
Yeah. So let's just take it. We'll do the, actually, we'll probably record if I remember to bring my mic. If I can fit it into my...
You're going on this trip.
Yes, I leave for Phoenix on Wednesday. So I'll be hopefully watching the Raptors-Spurs game from the pool, let's hope.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't realize.
Yeah, no. That's so exciting. Hopefully we will record this after the Lakers game on Monday. If we can't record, we'll get a podcast to you as soon as I am able to tell you what time it is when I return. But I will say they will beat San Antonio. A lot of this is Van Vliet dependent. I know I can't. Obviously, I wouldn't have picked the Raptors to win in Cleveland if they did. If I knew they wouldn't have Fred Van Vliet, guys. But I'm guessing that he'll be back, so I'll pick them to win in Cleveland win in San Antonio. I'm predicting a win in Phoenix. Is that dumb?
Oh, okay.
Almost certainly. I'm doing it. A loss in Denver. Nikola Jokic with a 40-point triple-double. And no, I'm going back. They're going to lose in Phoenix. They're going to lose in Denver. And I predict they will beat the Lakers. 2-2. How about
but isn't
you?
There five games?
Yeah, the Clippers game, but I'm hoping to record. I'll say they'll lose to the Clippers, but I reserve the right to change that if we do record.
So you
Tuesday.
Say 2-2, but really 2-3.
Yeah. How about you?
Okay. I don't even know if I'm that positive for being real. We're really switching it up this week. I don't know. I think they'll beat the Lakers.
Yep, that's one.
Mostly because I think if they don't beat the Lakers, I'm going to really evaluate some things. It's crazy that I'm honestly picking the game with LeBron James as the game they're going to win, because LeBron, how many times has he made me eat my hat when he plays the Raptors? I think they're going to go 2-3, but I think they're going to beat the Clippers and the Lakers.
Wow, so rallying off a six-game losing streak to
oh god,
yeah, that makes it a bit different, doesn't it, when you know they've lost six in a row.
I would feel better about the Spurs game if I thought that Fred would be back, obviously, but I just don't know.
I mean, nobody knows. So
but now you have me being paranoid about being overly confident, so I don't want to be like, oh, they'll be 3-2, and then everyone will say this idiot always thinks they're gonna win when they don't.
Well, I think picking 2-3, I mean I did pick that, but I think that's where you are right now. If anything,
I think that is where I am. Yeah, if Fred or OG return and are healthy, then I would change that to 3-2.
Okay.
But I still think that Denver Phoenix will be tough. And I know that the Raptors played Phoenix extremely well the last time they saw them in Toronto, but and there won't be Chris Paul. Well, maybe. No.
Phoenix. All right, you're picking a loss. Well.
Yeah.
2-3. We both have them going 2-3, but we will reassess if we do record on Tuesday. Quick, one question from T. Jones. Thank you for the questions. My buddy Steve sent a question that was not on topic. How much has seven games in 10 days had to do with the team's woes, Holly? I have a quick answer to this.
It hasn't helped. It hasn't helped at all.
Hasn't helped. I would say it is not a major factor in what's gone on, though. It is, the injuries are far and away the biggest factor. Maybe, and to whatever extent you consider this a different thing, the roster composition, which is very much by design, the second factor.
It sure is by design.
Yeah. And then fatigue. So the third biggest factor? Sure. Yeah. Let's go with that. Holly, we got to get out of here. I got to go get a rapid test so I can get into the United States. Matt Devlin should be back on the call on Wednesday night. I spoke to Megan McPeak, who filled in for him and Paul Jones at The Athletic. You can go read that. I believe there's still a $1 per month deal going
on. Subscribe to The Athletic. So what a deal.
You can do that and subscribe. Holly, anything you want to plug on the way out?
No.
All right.
Bunch of stuff in the works, but yeah.
All right.
Next week.
Well, follow Holly at StackMac if you want, or you can follow nobody and just be at peace.
Yes.
Holly, thank you very much. Listeners, thank you very much. Everybody be well, be cool to each other, be safe. And for now, I will tell you, see ya.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.